grocery giant Publix is doling out plenty of COVID vaccines. So why is the store chain under so much criticism? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, the politics of Publix as a Florida vaccination site. Give us a call now. It's 549-2937. Then later, what's good this Wednesday? Some positive news and notes for your week. First this hour, the latest numbers on the pandemic. 1.73 million cumulative cases in Florida now. And that's a 10,000 increase from Monday. The death toll in Florida from coronavirus stands at 26,822. So, of course, it's with all urgency that vaccinations are going into arms. And beginning today, Publix Pharmacy announced it will once again open appointments for eligible people to receive the Moderna vaccine at their select Florida locations. Now, the key word there is select. While Publix is offering vaccines now across 23 Florida counties, the grocery giant and Governor Ron DeSantis' administration have come under some criticism for this initiative, mainly because Publix stores are not often located in poorer and also majority African-American communities. There's even a move to boycott Publix at the same time after the Wall Street Journal reported that Publix heiress Julie Jenkins Fancelli was the primary donor behind the January 6th Capitol siege riots. Publix is also a major donor to the governor, among other politicians in the state. So we're beginning the hour with a look at the politics of Publix in the midst of this vaccination rollout. We're pleased to welcome A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics. Good morning, A.G.
Good morning, Melissa.
And Tim Gibbons, editor-in-chief of the Jacksonville Business Journal. Hi, Tim.
Good morning.
Okay, it's 549-2937. We're talking Publix and the COVID vaccine today. Already getting your calls. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. In a moment, I'll go to Tim for how this could be affecting Publix's bottom line, which is, by the way, very healthy. But let's begin with the politics of all this, A.G. Publix has a long history of political donations in this state, mainly to Republicans. It has been a donor to Governor DeSantis, but that was before this vaccination program was launched. And the chain has come under some criticism only in the sense that Publix stores tend to be located in middle to upper middle class, majority white affluent neighborhoods, particularly their pharmacies. And so access to the vaccine is not as easy for people who live in food deserts, for people who don't have public transportation. What are your thoughts about this?
Right. I mean, that's a limitation of the public-private partnership model. You know, Publix has no incentive to go into low-income neighborhoods, you know, and cities like Jacksonville struggle with food deserts, struggle with the idea of trying to incentivize like these businesses to come in. They haven't had that much luck so far. But regarding Publix, I mean, Publix tends to go to new construction or active gentrification neighborhoods. Like you see it in Riverside, for example, in Jacksonville. You see it in Nocatee. You're not going to see it, you know, necessarily in Northwest Quadrant. These are business decisions the chain makes, and they jive with the governor's own political marketing in this case. I mean, the governor, you know, his appeal is on people over the age of 45, white, retirees. Those are, you know, that's hunting where the ducks are. And, you know, when he's saying seniors first and go to Publix, he's saying a certain type of senior, you know, has better luck going to Publix than a different type of senior. And, you know, poor people are disadvantaged also because they might lack internet access. So if you're, you know, basically queuing up for a vaccine appointment online, you know, and you don't have reliable online access, what's going to happen? Your cousin's going to go to the UPS store and do it? Go to the library? I mean, these are the issues that get run into. So, you know, Governor's stacking numbers at Publix. He's doing it for good political reasons. But thus far, it's been tipped Republican. But for Publix, this is nothing new. I mean, Publix backed Adam Putnam until Putnam got tagged as being an NRA sellout during Parkland. Publix stood against medical marijuana, something that 72% of the people in the state voted for. Publix can get behind it because it threatened their pharmaceutical wing. So you look at that, and then you look at something like the heiress donating to the Stop the Steal protest before the siege of the Capitol. And there are reasons for a lot of people who aren't right of center to have serious concerns about this company and about the people who benefit from it.
Right. The Publix's heiress, Julie Jenkins Fanchelli, the Wall Street Journal reported she was the primary donor behind the logistics that led up to the Capitol siege on January 6th. Publix has distanced themselves from her, saying she's simply a shareholder. She doesn't have any say-so over business operations. At the same time, yesterday on this program, the president of the Northeast Florida Medical Society, Dr. Rogers Kane, talked about disparities in getting vaccinations out to all of the communities of this city. Here's Dr. Kane.
I would like to have our community leaders, the city council, and others to vocalize their concern, much like they did with Lot J, in terms of helping this community. So if we can recruit them in terms of making sure that the vaccine distribution occurs within the north side as well as other sides of town, we would much appreciate it.
Okay, amidst that comment, AG, the public spokesperson, who, by the way, is having a very busy few weeks, got back to us about all this. And we asked her, will Publix be expanding its vaccination sites into urban areas like Duval County? For example, they are vaccinating in Nassau County, but not Duval. She says that question may best be answered by the governor's office. Now, at the same time, Mayor Lenny Curry tweeted yesterday that there will be a major announcement tomorrow morning about vaccination supply that will benefit the North Side. Paying attention to this, AG.
Yeah, and I think one reporter, Bridget Matter of Action News, had it tagged as pods, which jives, like basically centralized centers where you can do a set amount of vaccinations a day. They're doing it long-term care facilities down south. And, you know, it's the way that the governor's office is trying to answer to critics and basically saying, Publix isn't your only avenue for vaccines, right? In some places it is, because these bedroom counties, they don't have the real county health departments that need to deal with this. They might not have hospitals nearby. So you've got these issues where, he's bet heavily on Publix. But, governor's office, they've, put vaccination stations in churches and things like that, trying to get that kind of buy-in. But it's a lagging indicator. It's going to be a good PR story for the governor's office, for the mayor's office, but there's got to be more follow through. And, ideally, because the brunt of the risk is borne by black and brown people in terms of the retail and the service sector, there needs to be at least as aggressive testing and vaccinations at these pods as there is Publix per person per capita.
Let's bring in our business editor, Tim Gibbons, with the Jacksonville Business Journal. I'll read another tweet for you. It's from Dr. Sunil Joshi, the head of the Duval County Medical Society Foundation. He says, having where shopping is a pleasure be the only private pharmacy providing the vaccine is a classic example of elitism and systemic racism. Strong words from a prominent physician in this community. And what about these calls to boycott Publix? Can they really make an impact on one of the largest companies in America, by the way, and one of the healthiest? And certainly they've been doing better than ever in this pandemic.
They have. And in a broader sense, boycotts, typically don't actually hurt businesses. It's a lot of fur. It doesn't hurt their bottom line. What it does often hurt with businesses is their reputation. And Publix is very, reputation conscious. So it will be interesting to see all of these calls for boycott, for people voting with their dollars. Publix, as you well know, is a, beloved institution. It's funny, when we have new people move here and we introduce them to Pub Subs, people have this very, very warm feeling toward Publix, who routinely tops, lists of well-regarded brands. And everything around this, and to me, this is the interesting bit, that it's hit after hit. The idea of making a donation to DeSantis and then immediately being chosen as the private sector vaccination partner is one thing, and then the donations for the insurrection riots is another thing. Even though that is not directly the company, they've made pains to distance themselves from the Publix heiress, but it all becomes a thing in the consumer's mind, and it does have a reputational hit to the brand.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting to look at what's going on in this sector, because there's so much competition, Tim. Alternatives like Grassroots and Native Sun, locally owned ones. Lots of new players have come into this market in recent years. Whole Foods is just one. The public's dominance of the grocery market is remarkable, even given these headwinds, because it's a competitive industry.
It's a very competitive industry. You go to San Jose Boulevard, there's the spot you can look around and see, I think it was, you know, 9 grocery stores.
Yeah.
Low margin business, very competitive, and that is why reputation and brand matters. You know, people go to Publix by choice. It's not like it's the only supermarket that they can get to oftentimes, although there are those areas, as AG mentioned, where Publix is the supermarket. But when you're in an area where there's choice, your brand matters, your reputation matters, and anything that sullies that or damages it can have impacts, you know, in the long term.
We're talking with Jax Business Journal editor Tim Gibbons and A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics about Publix as they roll out more vaccination sites at pharmacies around the state, but not yet in Duval County. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. AG, the place to go online to reserve your vaccine appointment at Publix is publix.com/COVID vaccine. Of course, everyone tells us that the minute they open up new slots, they immediately become filled and then the site is even crashed. We're being told new appointments will open Friday morning. That's the next time people should check this. At the same time, this morning, AG, the Biden administration announced that they are ramping up their COVID vaccination effort and partnering at select pharmacies around the country through the Federal Retail Pharmacy Program for COVID-19 vaccinations, partnering up with 21 national pharmacy partners and networks of independent pharmacies. So hopefully soon people will be able to access the vaccine at Walgreens, CVS, Walmart, Rite Aid. They mentioned Publix and Winn-Dixie, by the way, Costco, and other locations like that. So in the next several weeks, the picture could be very different, AG.
I mean, the picture should be different because the vaccine production is ramping up. You're getting shots in arms. You're getting a lot of second shots already in the city and state. So, you know, the regimen's moving apace. The question I have with what you just described is, will that increase the allocation to the state? It's going to be 325,000 next week, up from, I believe, 310 and 266 the weeks before that. So the first shots are coming up. The DeSantis administration's dispute with the Biden administration about whether, you know, second shots should be held in reserve, of course. So there needs to be some dialogue there in the actual between the state and, you know, the federal levels about it. But, you know, really it's a question of what the governor calls throughput. He said already that they could handle double the doses. Department of Emergency Management Chair Jared Moskowitz, who is a Democrat, said they could handle 3 times as many doses, 500,000 more doses, he said. So, you know, the state's pleading for more doses, and however they get them, they'll get them. I mean, DeSantis has even opened the door to the FEMA involvement, which is something he was closed to a week before.
549-2937. Give us a call. Cordia is downtown. Hi, Cordia. Good morning.
Hey, Melissa, how are you doing?
Good. What are your thoughts about Publix and COVID vaccinations?
Well, Publix and COVID vaccinations. I used to be an employee at Publix, an associate, and I do remember a time when Publix took away thousands, even millions of dollars worth of inventory bonuses that Mr. George has installed into Publix since the 1940s. And my issue with them is that 2 weeks after they did that, they gave like $2 million donation to Adam Putnam, which has completely disintegrated my trust with the public supermarket.
You're talking about their political donations, or are you saying that they take money out of employees' paychecks for political donations?
Well, about 5 years ago, Publix had this inventory bonus program that the original owner, George Jenkins, installed back in the 1940s. And instead of, so what they did, the employees' inventory and replaced it with a 25 to 50 cent bonus. But when after you do the math, it actually comes out that they've taken them.
I see. So in a backdoor way, you believe they perhaps took some of your paycheck and funneled it to a political donation?
Yeah, that's what I feel they do.
Okay. Thanks, Cordia. Tim Gibbons, this gets back to what you and I were talking about, just brand reputation, brand management for what I think is fair to say is a very strong brand in Florida and the Southeast. But as exactly. of late, these types of issues have not been good for the Publix's brand.
No, it's the thing that many companies are dealing with. I mean, you look at Blooming Brands based in Tampa, they cut their political donations to, I believe, with everybody involved, everybody who denied the reality of the elections. The Blue Cross Blue Shield Association did the same thing. We're in a time where people obviously have very strong feelings about things, and I think one of the through lines, if you look at how a company decides to donate and what they decide to donate to, they're kind of trying to do things that are, even if they're partisan, that they're kind of just seen as something you have to do. It's just business as usual. You know, you make the donation because it's a Florida politician, because the person's the governor, that sort of thing. And now when you're getting into specific issues, denying, you know, the reality of the election, that becomes a different thing that a company can be hit on versus just, oh, you donate to Republicans or you donate to Democrats. The heiress donating is a different situation because the company will say, you know, she's not involved. The people are saying their money is going to her and it is funding a cause that they very much are opposed to.
Right. I mean, the Jenkins family are shareholders. Can you clarify that a little bit? They are the founding family. I think they own about 20% of the company. The rest of the company is employee owned.
Correct. It's a Publix is not a publicly traded company, but you have the family ownership and then you have employee ownership, which gives, you know, some indication of their finances more than you get for a typical privately held company. And obviously, individuals can donate to whom they wish to donate. The company has been clear that the woman who actually funded the event in Washington, you know, has no control over the company. She's not involved with the company. She simply gets money as Publix does well.
Got it. All right. 549-2937. Eric in Arlington. Hi, Eric. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. A couple of points real quick. Number one, from a public safety standpoint, public stores tend to be a little bit smaller than other grocery stores, and they also tend to be heavily trafficked. So you have a lot of people in a Publix already. Now you're going to get a bunch of people lined up in these stores that are already have a lot of density in them. I think you're looking at potential super spreader events. I don't think this was a good idea from that standpoint.
With everybody masked up?
Well, I don't know if you've been, like, the Publix that I go to sometimes over near Ortega.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you go in that store, and it's impossible to maintain 6 feet. It's absolutely impossible. You just cannot do it. There's not enough room because there's so many people in the store. And now you're going to add a line of people, you know, to stand and wait, a serious line of people. I mean, I guess I would imagine that there's going to be a lot of people coming to these stores to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
This just seems like a dumb idea. But once again, the other thing I wanted to say was I think that maybe Publix should change its tagline from where shopping is a pleasure to where insurrection is a pleasure.
Oh, come on now, Eric. Oh, man. Oh, mic drop from Eric A.G. Gankarski.
Yeah, that's the line I don't have to use. I mean, we're sitting here arguing how many degrees of separation there are between a chicken Publix sub and Alex Jones, basically. And, you know, that's kind of the problem we're having with this is, you know, we have finite consumer dollars. And, you know, if 20% of our grocery purchase is going to people who think that rally on January 6th was a good idea with not entirely foreseeable public safety consequences that took lives and have created fissures in Congress that will take years and years to heal. I mean, that's that's really what this comes down to for a lot of people. I mean, is it an actionable sentiment that people have? I mean, not necessarily. I think the boycotters will eventually go back.
Yeah. I mean, and let me just jump in and say to you about that. People might have very strongly held beliefs about this, but in the end, people tend to go and get their food and get their stuff at the most convenient, most easily accessed location. Publix knows that. They tend to be on those corners that are very convenient and easily accessed for a lot of people.
Yeah, and a lot of people, you know, honestly, they don't care. There was a Florida Chamber poll last week had Ron DeSantis at 54%. And even the Chamber poll, you can add like 4 or 5 points to Republicans, you know, he's still over water, basically. And, you know, with all that he's gone through, all of the catering to Trump for 2 years, you know, all of the buffoonish appearances on Fox News, you know, you name it, he's still over 50%. And, you know, he's going into a year where he's going to be able to define himself against the Joe Biden White House. So, you know, DeSantis and Publix can weather the storm, basically, and they can create enough positive press to basically, you know, between, you know, little things like highlights of vaccinations that aren't at Publix, you know, versus Fox News hits for the governor, where both of them will be fine.
Lots of emails. Here's one from a listener. Of the 1,264 public stores in Florida, more than 1,000 have pharmacies. Outside of CVS and Walgreens, they have the most pharmacies. It makes sense to use their numbers in the fight against COVID. Thank you, Publix. Another email. It's too simple to blame Publix for distribution of vaccines. They are a natural site, but they shouldn't be the only site. The issue isn't Publix, but what we're doing to address underserved citizens. A chronic issue in this state. We do not focus on the people who can least access health care. Lots of comments on our Facebook page. Here are just a few. Publix has been my go-to store since 1996. I am extremely disappointed to find out about the Publix era siding with the seditionists and traitors. Publix aside, says another listener, how many CVS and Walgreens pharmacies are located where Publix doesn't serve, especially the north side? Another comment, how will the governor mitigate the uneven distribution of the vaccine's availability? And on Twitter, lots of tweets coming into the show. Here's one. It's another example of why we have two Floridas. The governor's efforts are directed to one Florida only, the one that will reelect him in 2022. Even if vaccine supplies weren't constrained, the distribution would be tilted and will be even when they become more available. All right, let's take one more call. It is Daryl in St. Augustine. Hi, Daryl.
Good morning. Yeah, if you get your vaccine at the same place you buy your beer, you might live in a redneck state.
I think you're giving that guy a little competition. Who does the you might be a redneck bit? Why is his name slipping my mind?
Jeff Foxworthy.
Thank you, Daryl. Daryl in St. Augustine.
Yeah, well,
all right.
There's that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. Tim Gibbons, you know, we can joke about this.
The Larry the Cable Guy.
We can have fun with this topic, but this is a deadly serious topic. Let me bring this back now to the numbers. President Biden is requesting $350 billion from Congress in his COVID plan, and that does include federal pharmacy partners. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, this whole conversation could be moot in a couple of weeks as more of these giant businesses come on side and join this vaccination effort. Let's hope so. I mean, the more access points, the better.
And that is one of the realities of when we talk about Publix doing it. And one of your emailers kind of referenced this. I don't think anybody's upset that Publix is part of the vaccine distribution strategy. We need as many vaccine distribution partners as possible. The question is that, you know, they should not be the only one because of demographics and also just a matter of fairness. But I can predict with a great deal of confidence once the vaccine becomes widespread, the gold rush amongst vaccination distribution networks, you know, the people who do flu vaccinations now, the entire healthcare community, this is an opportunity for them both to serve the public and to do the business that they do.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of hay has been made, Tim, out of Publix's political donations. What about, say, Winn-Dixie's political donations or some of the other private companies that they are in competition with?
So I'd have to actually go and look up, and for your listeners, opensecret.org is a place where you can go and review a range of political donations, although depending on who exactly is being donated to, not everything is captured. But it is not something that has become an issue for Winn-Dixie or Winn-Dixie's parent company, Southeastern Grocers. Although there was a little fur earlier in the pandemic when Winn-Dixie would not require masks. But donations are a thing that sometimes I think surprise people that companies even do donations, but pretty much any large company that you do business with probably is making donations. The president of Microsoft recently had a speech to their employees and basically explained, hey, we have to donate because that gets us in the room with politicians and that's how we get contracts. So you can decry the system. You can say that's not exactly the way that you want business and government to interact, but making political donations for many, many companies is just a reality
of
life.
Yeah, that's part of doing business. Okay, AG, let's bring it back to the local level. As we had been mentioning, Mayor Lenny Curry will have a big announcement tomorrow about increasing access to COVID vaccines for the north side of Jacksonville. Let's talk about that a little more.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to... And that's going to help the perception and the reality, because you'll have, you know, as we talked about earlier, a set amount of vaccinations per day. And, you know, in other places, 750 or 1,000. So, you know, you can kind of do the math and see that you'll make a dent in the senior population you couldn't get to other locations. I mean, that's the issue you have in these area of towns. You've got transportation challenges also. And the private sector is not ever going to be able to backfill it because, you know, just as there aren't enough Publixes in these areas, there aren't enough Walgreens, there aren't enough CVSs, and on and on. And, you know, so that's the reality. Government has to step up here. Government has to bring it to the people. And it,
you know, community centers, Boys and Girls Clubs, things like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, wherever a good location is that can support the vaccine, because as we know, all these vaccines have storage requirements. So, you know, it's got to be someplace that has reliable infrastructure.
That is still a challenge. In the meantime, it's always great to get both of your insights. Thank you both guys so much for jumping on with us this morning as we try to bring folks up to date on this. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Stay safe.
We were joined by A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics and Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal. Now, once again, new vaccination appointments at Publix pharmacies will open up again Friday morning, 7 a.m. Mark your alarm. Check it immediately. Publix.com/COVID vaccine to try to book your slot. Let me know if you're successful on that front. Well, a quick break and much more still ahead on the show later in the hour. A look at what's new at the Leitner Museum in St. Augustine. Plus, we've got some good news and notes for your Wednesday, but up next.
But as people start moving about their business, then, you know, small businesses will get more stable and get more confident.
Banking executive Marty Lanahan on the 2021 market forecast. Can brighter days maybe be ahead? That conversation is next. We'll be right back.
Peter O'Dowd.
I'm Callum Borchers. Miguel Cardona faces questions from the Senate looking to confirm him as the next Secretary of Education. One key question, when does he think students will be back in the classroom?
Also, our political strategists join us to grade President Biden's efforts to pass a new COVID relief package. That's next time on Here and Now.
Tomorrow at 1 on WJCT News 89.9.
It's the biggest stories affecting the Sunshine State. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
Each week at noon, we interview newsmakers and people from across the state discussing the stories and issues that affect your life. What's driving the conversation in Florida?
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Every Friday at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
The coronavirus will decline when enough people are vaccinated for people to have herd immunity.
However, there's a lot of complexities with this pandemic that make herd immunity a little bit more of a complicated and possibly elusive concept.
What could keep us from reaching that goal? On the next morning edition from NPR News.
Tomorrow, starting at 5 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, Jacksonville native Marty Lanahan recently got a big promotion. She was recently named the new regional president for Iberia Bank First Horizon. And she has some insights, both on the 2021 market forecast and that latest round of PPP funding. Here's that conversation. Hi, Marty. Good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
You know, before we talk about the financial forecast for the year or the next round of PPP funding, let me first offer congratulations. You've been named Florida Regional President for the North, Central, and Southwest Florida regions at Iberia Bank First Horizon. That's a big deal. Congrats.
Well, thank you very much. I love the organization, and I've been having fun integrating a team during COVID. It's not exactly the greatest time to integrate teams, but we're getting creative.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Now, you're a well-known figure in Jacksonville, a native. You've been a leader in the banking industry for some time. And this, I would think, would be a really challenging time, but an interesting time to be in the banking and finance world. So as we move into the new year and more people get vaccinated and we hopefully can pull out of this pandemic soon, how do you see the market forecast for this year and beyond?
Well, you know, I think there's so many, it depends, Melissa. You know, if we do continue down the path of getting folks vaccinated, and I will tell you that the Jacksonville community has probably done a better job than some of the other communities that I've seen throughout the state of Florida in getting those shots in those arms. But as people start moving about their business, then, you know, small businesses will get more stable and get more confident. And my hope is that consumers will feel more stable. It's been fascinating watching deposits grow as people have been hunkered down. They're just not spending that much money, A, because they're not out and about in the community. But I think there's a little bit of fear, obviously. I think we all have fear about the future. So we've got to get those vaccines out there.
Okay. And so once that happens, consumer spending, you would think, would start to go up. And then at the same time, for business owners, there's more PPP money now available. What are the biggest points that you want to get across to listeners about that opportunity and how banks like yours are handling that with your clients?
Well, you know, there was a panic that we were going to run out of money with the first round of PPP. And in fact, we did. But the second round of PPP back then is still open and available. As a matter of fact, we've had about 10% of our applications be people who have never applied for PPP before. But the bulk of the folks who are applying for this a second round, if you will, are folks who have can illustrate that they have had revenue shortfalls during one of the quarters of last year by 25% or more, and that's really an awful lot of folks if you think through the fact that we all went into a pretty serious lockdown at the beginning of last year. But what I would tell everybody is to be patient. The rules have changed for banks and the processes have changed, and every organization is still working through those processes, but it every day gets better.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. Yeah, I want to ask you, too, you've risen to the top of a very traditional industry. You are one of the most high-profile female CEOs or executives in Jacksonville. And so people do look to you for leadership in that area. What's your advice for women who are climbing the ranks, climbing the ladder at their companies? And what can they learn from your experience?
Oh, wow. I stand on the shoulders of so many women who were trailblazers before me, and you're kind to point out that there aren't that many women in the financial services industry. But what I always tell women is to become a subject matter expert in your field and raise your hand to take that leadership job that maybe isn't a natural fit to your skill set. To have the courage to raise your hand and volunteer for opportunities. The first time I ran anything was, gosh, at the First Union Bank in Jacksonville, Florida. I raised my hand to take on a role that I had really no appreciation of what I was getting into, but I knew I could do it, and I knew that I would have not just a mentor, but a sponsor who would help me. You know, sponsors are the people who are going to tell you the truth, and they're going to tell you where you need to go with your career, and they're going to be in the room where it happens, where they're able to say, you know, Melissa is ready for that job and we need to give it to her. And I think so many times women get wrapped up in mentors, but we really need to have sponsors. And I've been fortunate to have a lot of great sponsors in my career.
Great advice. Thank you so much, Marty Lanahan. It's good to hear your voice. Thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Take care of yourself and stay safe.
All right, it's Hump Day Wednesday. Time for our weekly look at some positive news and notes to get you through the rest of the week. You know, Punxsutawney Phil predicted six more weeks of winter Tuesday during that annual Groundhog Day ceremony in Pennsylvania. You know, we consider that a good thing down here in Jacksonville. The chilly temperatures are a reprieve from the heat and humidity that you know will be with us soon enough. So we say bring on six more weeks of winter, because in this part of the world, winter's so mild. And here's some more What's Good Wednesdays to warm you up on this chilly January morning. Speaking of cold temperatures, the Jacksonville DSA Housing Justice Campaign just launched a new fundraiser playing off the Senator Bernie Sanders mittens meme that, of course, took over the internet. Those images of Bernie from the inauguration sitting in a chair with his jacket and mittens have been photoshopped everywhere. Now, this new campaign is called Smitten With You for Caring About Housing, and it features original full-color illustrations of the iconic Bernie meme by renowned local artist Zoe Persico. Now, this initiative will benefit Jacksonville Area Legal Aid's housing unit to help our neighbors experiencing a housing crisis in Duval County during the COVID pandemic. Donors will receive Smitten Union Print shop cards and stickers, perfect for Valentine's Day, with artwork by Zoe Persico. She's the illustrator of popular children's books like Greta and the Giants and George's Terrific Colorific Experiment. So go to Legal Aid's website and check out that meme and that campaign. Jacksonville Beach's newest fast food place, Wonder Bird, from the owners of The Local, opened yesterday in Jacksonville Beach at 528 Beach Boulevard. Now, this offers farm-raised, steroid-free, hormone-free chicken options, vegetarian dishes. In celebration of the grand opening and as a thank you to everyone working on the front lines of the pandemic, here's something good. Wonder Bird is offering a 50% discount to first responders and healthcare workers today and tomorrow. Customers can simply present their work ID or badge if they're not in uniform. After that, Wonder Bird will always offer any officer, police, fire, EMS in uniform, 25% off. Isn't that great? Now, speaking of first responders, I want to jump around in the rundown, Josh, and go to Baptist MD Anderson Cancer Center. They have a new first responders program to better serve firefighters in our community. According to the International Association of Firefighters, firefighter occupational cancer is the leading cause of line of duty deaths in the fire service. In 2019, more than 75% of deceased firefighters added to the IAFF Fallen Firefighter Memorial Wall of Honor died from occupational cancer. Baptist Health and Baptist MD Anderson have partnered with the Jacksonville Association of Firefighters, St. John's County Fire Rescue, and St. John's County Professional Firefighters and Paramedics IAFF Local 3865 as the preferred cancer center for their first responders. The partnership ensures a commitment to educating all staff members on the occupational hazards and increased risk of cancer that firefighters face. Patients will have a dedicated coordinator for continued support through their medical journey. I spoke about it with the medical director of this program, Dr. Sobrato Deb.
Firefighters are exposed to a variety of carcinogens doing their job, saving lives, pulling people from, you know, all kinds of catastrophes. Research studies have shown firefighters have a higher incidence of certain types of cancers.
Okay, here's another cancer fighting effort we love here on the show, the Donna Marathon. It's just around the corner and going virtual this year. The only marathon in the country dedicated to breast cancer research and care, the Donna, named after Donna Deegan, of course, is celebrating its 14th anniversary with a week full of pink, seminars, and racing starting February 6th. This annual event supports the Donna Foundation, providing financial assistance and support to families living with breast cancer. They fund groundbreaking breast cancer research at Mayo Clinic, and they celebrate survivorship. This year's theme is Everywhere Together. This year's race reminds us all that we can come together and achieve great things, even if we have to be socially distanced. The foundation and marathon founder and namesake, Donna Deegan, will join us on Friday to explain how. In the meantime, you can sign up to race and even attempt to beat the time of our producer, Heather Schatz. She is running the 5K on her birthday. Just go to the Donna Foundation and the Breast Cancer Marathon website and check it out. Finally, Vinyl Wednesdays are back at Reeve Brewing in Atlantic Beach starting Wednesday, which is today. And recurring the first Wednesday of every month, the folks at Coast to Coast Records will be at the brewery for a vinyl pop-up. That's tonight from 5 to 10 p.m. They'll be spinning records and have a good selection of new and used vinyl on hand for sale. Our music director, David Luckin, is going to love this. They'll also be tapping a new grape sour for the occasion. Pretty cool. Now, masks are required when you're not at a table drinking or eating. Takeout or delivery is encouraged, so make sure to bring one along as you show not one, but two local businesses some love tonight. And if you have something you'd like us to add to our weekly menu, email us for What's Good Wednesdays at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and subscribe to the newsletter. It goes out later today. In a moment, more good news. A full slate of events at the Leitner Museum in St. Augustine this spring and summer. We'll get the very latest after this.
Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and a life plan for every stage of aging. Information at vickerslanding.com. Congarean Pen, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering field-to-fork dining and outdoor experiences on over 300 acres. Sip, dine, explore. Information at congareeandpen.com.
Germany has done a lot to confront its Nazi past, but far-right extremism persists. Researchers say it can turn dangerous if left alone.
It's pretty much impossible to convince someone who doesn't want to be convinced, especially if their family shares their views.
Why schools are making time to confront xenophobia in the classroom. Teaching tolerance in Germany on the world.
This afternoon at 3, here on WJCT News 89.9.
The concept of what it means to be an employee is actually not all that old.
Lawmakers are struggling with the right word for this. Workmen, contractors, hirelings, laborers.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. How being an employee came to be and the battles around it still going on today. Next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6 here on WJCT News 89.9.
Mars has fascinated skywatchers for centuries.
And liftoff, the perseverance of humanity launching the next generation of robotic explorers to the Red Planet.
Two rovers, two orbiters, and one helicopter are getting ready to rendezvous with the Red Planet. What should we Earthlings expect? We'll find out next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, museums are edging back carefully to more in-person exhibits and events despite the ongoing pandemic. That includes the Leitner Museum in St. Augustine, a cultural jewel where a full calendar of events, both hybrid and in-person and virtual, are all on tap for this spring and summer. I spoke about all of the new attractions at the Leitner with their CEO, David Bagnall. Take a listen.
Hey, David, thanks so much for being with us. Good to talk to you.
Hi, Melissa. Good to talk to you as well.
So as we all await the end of this pandemic, museums and cultural institutions are doing what they can to keep your spaces vibrant. Tell us what's going on right now at the Leitner Museum.
Well, we've just launched a competition for local artists with support from the Benjamin and Jean Trammell Art Foundation. We are opening up one of the galleries at the museum as an exhibition space for local artists. So we'll have three of these exhibitions over the course of 2021, one in April, one in July, and one in September. The program is called Leitner Local, and we're currently accepting submissions from artists within the Northeast region of Florida to have a solo exhibition at the museum.
And can it be any art form? What particularly are you looking for?
We're focused on painters. Jean Trammell was a local painter here in St. Augustine, and so as part of her legacy, her focus is on painters. So that's what the focus of these exhibitions will be, local artists who are painters.
Wow, that's an exciting opportunity. So check that out at their website. And later this year, you are planning to debut a pretty exciting exhibition on American Impressionism. Tell us about that.
That's right. I mean, we're looking forward this spring to bringing in some new exhibitions to the museum. As you mentioned at the beginning with COVID, we're looking for ways to sort of safely open up the museum and bring in new audiences. So we're actually launching two Impressionism exhibitions. One is called American Impressionism Treasures from the Daywood Collection. This is from the acclaimed collection of the Huntington Museum in West Virginia and focuses on artist colonies in the Northeast and on the West Coast, showing works of American Impressionism. And one of the great things with this is that the Leitner Museum, part of our paintings collection, focuses on American Impressionists at work in St. Augustine. So many of the artists from these artist colonies actually wintered in St. Augustine. They were attracted here by the wealthy clients who wintered at Henry Flagler's hotels in St. Augustine. So we actually have some it's a companion exhibition to this larger exhibition of American Impressionism from the Daywood Collection.
That's exciting. And, of course, in Jacksonville, people visit the Kummer Museum not only for the artwork, but also the beautiful gardens. You have some plans at the Leitner Museum for your terrace and garden. What do you have up your sleeve there?
So actually, we just began construction work at the rear of the museum. Historically, the Alcazar Hotel had a lot of recreational facilities. At the back of the building were tennis courts. That's no longer there, but we have a garden area with a fountain that was originally designed by Flagler's architects, Carrer and Hastings. And we're initiating a plan now to reinvigorate that space and transform it into a community garden and outdoor program space for the museum. So it's a six-month project. We've just kicked that off. So it's a pretty exciting time here at the Leitner.
It sure is, and I encourage everyone to check out the Leitner Museum because in addition to your new leadership and all of these exhibits, it's just one of the most beautiful buildings around. You must love coming to work there every day.
It's a tremendous space to come into each morning. It's such a landmark here in St. Augustine, so have the opportunity to come here, work every day, it's a privilege. It's a lot of fun as well. So yeah, you can learn more about all of these new projects and activities at our website, leitnermuseum.org.
Leitnermuseum.org. David Bagnall, heading up the Leitner Museum. David, good to hear your voice, and hope the spring and summer is an exciting time. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thanks, Melissa.
Quick caveat, we say this every day, whether you go to a museum or any other indoor space, please keep masking up. We realize there is no mask mandate in St. John's County where the Leitner is located, and we've heard from so many listeners about that. They're dismayed about it. Wear those masks, everyone. Let's all do our part to stay safe as we hopefully are nearing the end of this pandemic soon. And that is our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is the always masked Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Always appreciate your emails. Keep those coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And if you missed any part of today's show, our podcast is up later today, wherever you like to listen. Or you can always download our podcast and all of our WJCT content right through the WJCT app. Download that today. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Talk to you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.